In association with Newsarama, welcome again to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. This is John Suntress. Today, we speak with artist-writer Scotty Young, who's been spending a lot of years in the X world of Marvel Comics, but he moves away from the mutants to go to the Land of Oz in an adaptation of L. Frank Baum's Wonderful Wizard of Oz. Scotty is the artist. Eric Shanover, who you may know from his work in Age of Bronze, is the writer in this 8-issue adaptation, which, of course, will eventually be collected in a beautiful trade. We get into a discussion about the Oz mythos and its various representations in other media, the play, the novel version of Wicked, to Todd McFarlane's twisted Land of Oz statue. You'll hear about his collaboration process with Eric Shanower. And we also discuss Scotty's comedy and music podcast, The Devil and Me, co-hosted with Casey McCauley. There's also an informal talk about where comics are going in 2009, both digitally and the collected trade versus the monthly trade. All coming up in this conversation on Word Balloon.
How did the project start?
When I was still doing my, in the middle of my new X-Men run, about a year and a half ago now, I just got a call from Marvel, and they said, hey, we got a new project that we think you'd be good for, and they, you know, of course, I'm like, what is it? And it was Wizard of Oz, and Wonderful Wizard of Oz, the adaptation of the novel, and I thought, at first, I just couldn't believe it, like, this is too weird, and the thing that kind of tipped it off that made it even a little bit more strange was about 3 days before I got the call, Tom Caters from Around Comics, he and his girlfriend had come over to our house, and we had a Wizard of Oz night where we watched Wizard of Oz and Return to Oz, and just kidding, you know, just like, oh, remember all this, and then, you know, a few days later, I get the call from Marvel saying, hey, you know, we got your next project lined up if you want to take it. And so at first I just didn't believe it, like, because you don't often think, you know, when you think Marvel, you don't necessarily think that that's a book that would be there, you know.
Absolutely.
Even though they've been doing great things, I think, with the illustrated line and adapting a lot of classics, I still was just like, what? Really? Wizard of Oz? And at first, I mean, to be completely honest, as much as that book is a perfect fit for the kind of childhood I grew up with, I mean, I grew up with the Neverending Stories and the Labyrinth and the Dark Crystals and the Wizard of Oz. And these kind of stories and these fantasy children's books, that's what I started to love. Those probably came before comics for me.
Okay.
So as much as that appealed to me at first, that weird comic book side of me thought, yeah, I don't know, because I won't, you know, I might be taking myself out of the comic book world. You know what I mean? Like,
sure.
There was a fear that, because I know that this isn't going to be a direct market book. Not that it's not going to be in a direct market, but this isn't the book that comic book shops will probably, you know, put posters of in the front of their windows. And it, you know, this won't have the big marquee up next to the front desk.
Right.
Which I understand. It's an all ages book. This is geared towards children. So at first I got a little nervous. I really had to think about it. Even though it was a no brainer for me, and I knew that this would probably be more fun than anything I could ever do, I still, that, you know, kind of that business side of you starts questioning, like, you know, will I. You know, because, well, I just came off New X-Men, and the sales went up a pretty good percentage while I was on that.
Very cool.
And so things were going in a pretty good direction as far as that. So I started questioning it, but, you know, that the questioning took about a whole, you know, 2 days, you know, where I was like, okay, you know, I talked to a few friends, and then I just went, you know what, this is crazy. I mean, you know, the chance to do a book like this at Marvel, there's nothing more classic than The Wizard of Oz, you know.
Yeah.
Take any character at Marvel, The Wizard of Oz is more classic than them all, you know. So
yeah, they got a good 60 years on them as far as history for starters.
So at the end of it, I just said, you know what, it doesn't. I really let that kind of that whole mentality just down and say and ask myself, sat here and I, you know, talked to Casey and I said, I think that I just want to have fun. And not that I don't have fun on everything else that I do, but this to me was, I mean, obviously also they say, hey, look, if you do this, you have free reign. You know, it's going to be your world. You're going to re-envision Oz the way that you want to the way that you want to do it as far as visual styles go. And so, yeah, it just took a few, you know, a day or two, and then I called them back and said, all right, let's do it. And then they got Eric Schanauer on board, which, for people who don't know, he's pretty much the modern-day Wizard of Oz aficionado. I think every generation has a key, the keeper of the key,
okay,
to the world of Oz, and Eric's been that too for a while. I mean, he knows that book. He knows those books in and out, and has done a considerable amount of books on his own in the world of Oz, doing the art. So they got him to come on and write after they got me on board for the art, and then it was off to the races. They gave me tons of time to doodle around and develop the artwork while Eric wrote the script, and even on the schedule, they really said, "Hey, you come on and do this," and it's, you know, it's a slow burn project. You know, you get the time that you want and take your time and pace yourself. And so it's really been a fun thing to get started on.
Now, like the other Marvel classics, is it going to come out monthly first and then be collected?
Yeah. The first novel, The Wonderful Wizard of Oz, is what we're doing right now, which we have, it's going to be 8 issues.
Okay.
I'm already on the 5th. Issue, so
cool.
I'm further ahead on this than I've ever been on any project that I've ever worked on, so it's nice to be doing something that's where there's no stress involved.
Very cool. I've been to your blog and I've seen some character sketches that you've had, and I find it interesting because for people who don't know, L. Frank Baum, of course, wrote the books, but it was W.W. Denslow who was the original illustrator.
Uh-huh.
And I see some hints of that in your work. I mean, still very original. Did you look over the original illustrations and take any cues?
Yeah, I mean, you can, I definitely. As soon as I got the job, I went and read through the book again. Just pulled it off the shelf and ran through it and read it and flipped through and checked out Denslow's stuff. We definitely wanted to make sure that we go back to the original. And not that the MGM movie wasn't great and everybody loves it, but that's not really that's not the Wonderful Wizard of Oz. It is a different beast.
I hear you.
So going back to the book and looking over Denslow's illustrations definitely was something that I thought would be appropriate. So you could at least have that be the stepping stone to go where you needed to go. And I mean, who better than the guy who Baum sat there and said, "Hey, this is what this is going to be. This is what this is going to be." So he really knew what Baum was going for in a lot of those things. So I looked at that as much as I could, but then quickly turned that off. You know, as soon as I got through looking at this, quickly tried to close that book and not go back to it, to also hope that I could just read the text from the book, read the text from the script and what Eric had translated, and try to imagine what I would have created had Baum been telling this to me. You know?
I gotcha.
So, yeah, I mean, you can't help but have that in the back of your mind, but it definitely has been a challenge to be original without shaking the ground too much and making people just go, "Now that's just crazy." You know what I mean? Like, that just doesn't, you know, because you want to respect the material, but you don't want to be a slave to it either. I wanted to make sure that people go, "Oh, man, I didn't even think of it like that," you know?
An aunt of mine had a lot of the first editions of the Baum books, and I was able to see them. I didn't read more than the first, and certainly wasn't allowed to touch it as a kid because
right.
It was this, you know, amazing heirloom. I mean, even back then, it was 70 years old when I was a kid. So,
right.
But yeah, I mean, and I really did dig a lot of the original illustrations that Denslow did. And you say yourself respecting the material, but also wanting to do your own thing. In the last few years, we've seen some really weird left field shit come out. You know,
yeah.
that is tied to Oz. And yeah, and I even remember actually probably pouring through a previews with you and you know, seeing some of the statues and some of the really like S&M Dorothy stuff that was coming out where it's like, what the hell is this?
That's you know, and a lot of the things where people have talked to me and they've asked me about things the first thing that they ask is, you know, what are you doing? How crazy are you going with the art? Blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, well, you know, we're not going to make Dorothy a whore. You know, like, it seems like every time I turn around, like people, like the best thing that people could do when trying to adapt like The Wizard of Oz or Alice in Wonderland is like make them sluts.
Right.
You know,
like, yeah.
Like, oh, through the looking glass, except like you could see her panties and stuff. That's awesome. You know, and I'm like, come on, you know. So, and then, yeah, we're just hoping to be able to re-envision something that people are familiar with, and hopefully for kids that might not be, you know, give them something, restart them on something new.
Absolutely.
It's a kid's story. And I think for a lot of people who grew up watching the movie, you know, even, and may have never read the book, people don't realize, you know, Dorothy wasn't, you know, the teenage-looking girl that she was portrayed as the movie. She's a six-year-old. You know, she's a very young girl in the story in the book, which makes the journey that much more exciting, because you're seeing this insane world from a child's eyes who has only grown up in like the stark Dust Bowl era of Kansas. So it's definitely nice to be able to try to do something of that without turning it and saying, oh, hey, look, Dorothy sells her ass for money, you know.
So. Did you see Wicked? Have you seen any of?
I did see Wicked.
Well, how was that?
I read the book and then Kate. Well, first Casey, when it first came out, Casey was dying to go see it. So a few years back, when it first came to Chicago, mm-hmm. we got tickets to go see it for her birthday, and we went down. And I'm not a musical fan at all.
Okay.
And I really enjoyed it.
That's cool.
And then when I got done with that, I thought, well, I'll read the book that it was based on, by Greg Rumor-Wire, and read the book and enjoyed that to a degree. It was weird and quirky, but it was fun because it wasn't a retelling of The Wizard of Oz. It was just like kind of like a what if, like what happened on the other side of the story.
Sure.
Like, while Dorothy is in the world. What's going on with all the other characters. So it was interesting. I mean, you know, you definitely watch it and read it with a hint of going, well, this is all just crazy. So, you know, but I enjoyed it. It was fun. The set dressings and everything for the play Wicked were really fantastic.
And how was Return to Oz? Because I was always older and never, like, wound up seeing it, and I kind of am kicking myself because... On one hand, it sounds really interesting, and again, a little too dark. But
right.
You know, as an adult, it also sounds kind of appealing. And then again, like you were saying about Judy Garland being too old in the MGM film, in this case, they really did have a little kid playing Dorothy.
Yeah, it was actually Ruka Fault. What's her name? And it was like her first movie ever, but she's definitely that to me. It definitely had a dark edge to it, like. The children's stories have, but it was much more accurate to the books.
Okay, that's what I had heard. Yeah,
yeah, very creepy in a way, but imaginative. I mean, it still was, you know, it didn't have the budget that a lot of movies had at the time. So there were some cheesy effects and stuff like that. But you know, you go back and you're just like, man, this is pretty cool. Like when I was a kid, it was just incredible. But it has its flaws. It doesn't hold up perfectly, but it's still pretty sweet. It'd be nice now with the success of, you know, like the Harry Potter franchise. And it really would be nice to see somebody do a Lord of the Rings flavor style thing with the Oz books. You know, somebody who would go in with a respectful hand, and which I heard that, like, what I think Todd McFarlane has got the rights to do the Wizard of Oz movie.
Really?
I think. Yeah, it was announced a while back, so... So maybe that whore Dorothy isn't too far off. We'll actually get to see it at some point. Because McFarlane's the one who put out the crazy line of toys, right? Like,
well, yeah, I assumed it was either... I thought it was Dark Horse, but yeah, you're probably right. It probably was Image.
Yeah, it was McFarlane that put out like the S&M line of The Wizard of Oz.
Dorothy.
Yeah, that's what you think of when you think of the children's book line.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's... Yeah, unfortunately, that's not good, but... You know, we'll see your work eventually collected, and hopefully that'll inspire some nice children's a new children's audience, you know.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I'm excited. I'm excited for just the. I know I probably shouldn't say this, but even for the people who've asked me, I'm like, just hold off and buy the hardcover. buy the single issues and then buy the hardcover, because it'll more than likely get collected into a hardcover at the end of it, which will probably include the free sketchbook that just came out a couple weeks ago, which really Very that cool. was exciting as well, to have Marvel is really, really behind the project and has been super on the promotion and getting the word out there. So a couple weeks ago, they released a little 17-page sketchbook of just the developmental side of stuff, with me and Eric both talking a little bit about our thoughts behind the process.
Very cool. That is great, because I know they did the same things with the Stephen King books, and I know Perkins has really been excited as well, and I am glad that there is this initiative from Marvel. And certainly Roy Thomas has been writing a lot of the classics and rewriting the classics for that line of comics. And, I mean, tell me about, you know, Eric as a writer on this stuff. Is this the first... I'm not aware of, other than, you know, his work on the Bronze Age, as far as any other collaborations that he's done, and I know that's all him. So
yeah, I honestly don't. I'm not that familiar with any. I couldn't tell you if he's done much stuff with anybody else. I know that I think the majority of his career has been spent, you know, doing it all himself. I think that was even he may have had a little bit of. Reserves at the beginning, like any of us would when you're entering a project and you're unfamiliar with the person you might be working with. But I don't think it took him long to see that I was on the same page as him as far as respecting the material.
Very cool.
But his passion for it is, and his knowledge of it is so great that there's no stone unturned, and there's no... Eric is not, Eric really is adapting it. He's not trying to reinvent it. He doesn't think that he's, it's not like sometimes, you know, remakes of, it's not like I Am Legend, right, where a couple of 20-year-olds think they're smarter than Matheson.
And, he's
taking this and saying, how can I fit this into a sequentially told story? And sometimes that means, his scripts are really, really, really long because he really helps me out by, he takes complete passages from the book and throws it in there or in full descriptions and he'll go back and forth and compare, Denzel's illustrations to future illustrators who tackled the same object or same city or same location. And, he really gives me all the information that I would need to make the choices that I need to make. And at the same time, he's not forcing anything on me. He's saying, hey, here is what the original was. Now you just do whatever you want to do with it, and we'll see what happens. And I think we've both been pleasantly surprised on different things. Me with the scripts, and him with the art, on what he gets to see and what he might not have thought of, and what comes back to him. So it's been great working with him so far.
Who's lettering the book?
You know what?
I don't mean to put you on the spot if you don't know.
I'm going to be a big idiot and say I don't know, but I know that my editors were talking. They mentioned his name, and he is pretty well known in, I think, children's books.
Okay.
Or something, and he's lettering it. Because I actually approached and said when I sent in, I was like, one of my notes at the very beginning when I sent in my artwork was really... I'm requesting that no big, bubble letter crash, boom bam type
sure.
sound effects get laid on top. Like I was like, if any actual word sound effects go on, they have to have a whimsical storybook feel.
Cool.
Because I've really, for me on the art side, I've really tried to go out of my way to make it feel like an illustrated storybook and. To bring those worlds together, comic books and an older kind of ink and brush style illustration style storybook. So the last thing I wanted was like big gradients, big gradiated letters smashed sure. on top going crack. And so I think everybody's in agreement from top to bottom as far as the approach of Fantastic goes. So I wish I could remember his name, because Now I look like I don't know shit, but
well, I promise we'll have it in the intro and the outro and give the letter his just due.
Sweet, sweet.
But I was wondering because I can't help but think of Fables,
right?
And what Buckingham now I'm blanking. Who writes Fables? Shame on Bill Willingham.
Yeah, Willingham.
But the layout of Mark Buckingham and everything. I was wondering, did you look at Fables and did you, maybe take any ideas from, what Mark does in terms of not only the panel layout, but also you've seen those, ornate borders that he came up with as well. And yeah, and then again, it gives it more of a storybook feel.
Right. For me, on what I've done with the layout was, for me, I basically, I looked at the old books, mm-hmm. But maybe for one of the first times, simply because every time I've been on a book, when you get on New X-Men, or when I do a Spider-Man book, or I get on Venom, or I get on Human Swords, first thing you do is you go and you look at what's coming for you.
Sure.
You go and you do your research, and for New X-Men, I go get a couple trades. I see how people approach this character and that character and what he looks like and what this location looks like. So usually I spend most of my time doing my version of something that somebody else did. And so on. Every artist does the same thing. And sometimes even in the page layout, you want to match what's coming for you in a way. This was the first time where I felt a freedom to say, I'm literally going to be a blank slate. I'm not going to use anything else to dictate what it'll look like. So I just kind of set up a few simple rules for myself, which is no breaking of borders, keep it very much, the grid style format. Everything's boxed in. Everything's clean.
Okay.
I want this for a 10-year-old to be able to pick up and not be confused on what he's looking at. So everything that's inside a box is clear. And then on top of that, the inking style, I wanted to take back to a little bit classic, more just a whimsical brushstroke feel, where everything's not so tight, everything's not so crisp and clean. It's a little bit, again, whimsical. I kind of just let the brush do what it's going to do. That adds to the character of the book. Then on top of that, I went in and kind of made the gutters and the page a little, almost like it's like the book was illustrated on parchment in a way.
That's great.
To give it a little discoloration, to give it a little texture. Again, everything to take it back to a little bit of storybook feel, but other than that, all I wanted to do, I didn't want to confuse anything. All the artwork goes inside of a box. Anything outside of a box is crisp and clean and clear to allow the reader just to kind of focus on the story that's inside of it.
Very cool. No, man, that's great. Well, like we say, next week is issue one, so very interested to see what the finished product will look like, and it's a good team, so.
I appreciate it, man.
Well,
I'm excited too. I've been working on it for so long that I've been kind of off in my little cave, just doodling away. So sometimes when you get in that space and you have that long where you haven't had anything out there and nobody's seen, like I said, I'm starting issue 5 now. So what people are getting ready to see next week, it's 5-6 months ago. So I've actually half forgot what I've done there, but I'm excited for it. I'm pretty proud of it. And, I don't think I've had more fun, drawing a book than I've had on this. The support from my editors and everybody, all the creative people on the book has just been incredible. So you can't beat that when everybody's that happy. I mean, because, it's no secret. I've been kind of a weird cartoony guy that has, some people love and some people hate, but this is the kind of book where people enjoy, what I do works on this. I understand when people get nervous. If when I come on to tackle a Spider-Man, people start going, oh, shit. oh, fuck. What's he going to do, man? Is he going to give him, four heads, But this is the kind of book where they don't have to worry. What I do actually works better for something like this. Thinking a little bit outside the box and being a little free to take chances and stuff, it's actually encouraged on this. and because it's the kind of material, you know, it fits the material.
No, so. I agree, but I also am hopefully in the majority when I appreciate the non-standard superhero stuff that you do and others like you that, you know, you bring your own style. I mean, that there was that X-Men book part of Messiah Complex, that story that you did. Was it Messiah Complex?
Yeah, there was the two issues that I did leading up to it, the Childhood's End storyline, where I kind of, that was where I started to kind of loosen up and use a little bit more loose brushwork. And
but that was
beautiful.
It was beautiful stuff, man. And I'm not being nice. I mean, I really did. I just, it was very illustrative. And I think that don't get me wrong, you know, love John Romita Sr., love all the classic, you know, house styles of DC and Marvel through the years. And you know, respect this is the way that Neil Adams did Batman. So everyone else, you know, that follows isn't necessarily making a mistake by following in his footsteps. But I also do really appreciate when suddenly there's, you know, guys like you, like Mike Oeming, and you guys bring your own style, Cliff Chang and guys like that. No, it does. It only makes it a more interesting read to me.
I just think that it makes for, and I personally think, not this is a tooting my horn or anything, but just in general in comics as a fan, I like my landscapes to be varied. You know,
absolutely.
It's like, you know, if I drive across country, I don't want to drive across eight states that look like Illinois. I want to get to states that look like Colorado or look like New Mexico, you know, something that looks, and it's kind of the same when I go to the comic shop. I want to be able to immerse myself in all different types of looks and styles, just like I want to immerse myself in different writers. You know, I don't want the same three writers to write all the books. I want to read a guy who has a flair for, I want to read a guy like Zeb who can do a little drama, but really make me laugh my ass off.
Yep.
You know, I want to read it. You know, I want to read a guy like Azzarello on 100 Bullets. I want to read, but that's the same thing with my art. I want to see guys who can bring it gritty style, like a Jay Lee or a Tommy Lee Edwards or a John Paul Leone. But I also want to see the Umbertos of the world. I want to see.
You bet.
That's just me as a fan. So you know, I always hope that. Sometime down the line, people look back and go, he was a kind of a part of the movement that helped kind of make things look a little different here and there. I think bottom line, art should match the story, you know.
Sure.
There's nothing worse than picking up a book that's like a funny book, and then the art doesn't sell me that it's funny, you know. Or vice versa, you know, like, there are certain books that I should never probably draw because I might not be able to carry over the emotion or the certain type of tone that book might carry, and I'm the kind of person who is aware of that. You know, it's kind of why I started to enjoy getting the chance to write books now, because there are all types of genres that I'd like to get my hands on that I might not be the best fit art wise for, but I can pull out the keyboard now and write a little story in some genres that I might not be able to draw. You know, fit so well in as far as art goes.
Are you able to talk about any writing projects coming up or everything?
Well, I had one, and because it got solicited, but everything, things changed a little bit. I was writing a two-issue arc on Young X-Men, but some things switched around on that, and so that's, I'm still going to be doing the story, so there's not a lot of details in it, but I'm still writing that story, but it's going to be a little different. It's not going to be under the issue that was solicited. So that I'm doing. I am still working on my own graphic novel that I'm writing with an artist, Nick Kalislian from Toronto.
Cool.
That's just one of the personal projects I kind of had going for a while. Just a few other things. A lot of the things that I'm writing now are still kind of far down the pipe, but Marvel's definitely been really, really open and generous with giving me chances to write on a couple short stories and opening the door to give me a couple like arcs and a little couple minis coming down the pipe. So everybody seems to be pretty happy with, not that I've done big opuses or anything. I've just done some short stories for them so far in the Manifest Destinies and.
Mm-hmm.
And the Divided We Stand, and then the Frankenstein stuff. And,
yeah,
it's been fun. It's been really fun. The Manifest Destiny Juggernaut story that I wrote was the first time that I got to write, you know, I wrote something for, and I didn't draw it myself. Dan Pinoja was cool enough to come on and draw the story for me. So that was really exciting. I can definitely see why writers have fun, because it was nice just to be able to type away and be like, ha ha, I don't have to draw that shit. Like, you know what I mean? Like, even when I draw for myself, I'll be like, oh man, I really want to write that, but I don't know. That's a lot of drawing. Like, you know, because drawing's hard, man. It takes a lot of time. So, yeah, writing, I can see where writers can kind of just get let go sometimes and realize, I'm realizing like, oh shit, I just wrote him a whole lot of shit. That's going to be a tough page to draw. But well, it's fun.
Well, and for people who don't know, I'm hoping that the podcast is going well, The Devil in Me, because for those who don't know, you know, Scotty jumped on Around Comics and made his presence known for a while and was the fourth man, and then I think enjoyed it so much, obviously, that you you broke off, and you and Casey are doing it now. And I'm not being nice. Casey has a hell of a voice, and she really is fantastic. And
Thank you. Yeah,
she really is. I mean,
I'll pass it along. She's,
please do.
She's a good one. Yeah, we got once I got on Around Comics and we had fun. Honestly, it was really Casey's more than me wanting to do it. I had a blast on Around Comics and would go on the Crankcast and hang out with them from time to time. But it was really Casey, when she started listening to podcasts at her day job during work, she stumbled upon a Gilmore Girls podcast that a husband and wife did together, and she just got a kick out of it so much. She just thought it was so cute that the husband and wife did their little podcast together, that she just, once she knew that I understood what was going down in the podcast world from, you know, hanging out with you and the Around Comics guys, she was like, we should do one. So it was really her that kind of got me into wanting to do something outside of that. So, yeah, once we actually moved away and set up stuff, fuck it, let's go ahead and do it. And
very cool.
It's been really cool, actually. I mean, right off the bat, we had pretty good downloads.
Good deal.
And Casey and I, we're not really doing it for any reason. It's really when you're with somebody for, you know, Casey and I have been together almost 9 years, and you need to start having activities that you look forward to doing with each other over the week, you know, just to do something. So that's what it kind of became, was like, it's our one night a week where we just get to have some fun and bullshit around. So we didn't really have a goal or anything by starting it, but a few weeks after we started it, we started making it to, like, on the day that we'd release our episode, we were making it into the top 50 of comedy podcasts on iTunes. And
outstanding.
And then we were creeping up, and then I clicked open my iTunes one day and went. I was looking for some new podcasts to listen to, so I went to the main podcasting page on iTunes, and damn if we didn't have, like, a huge banner across the top.
Oh, that's great, man.
And so then there, for a couple weeks, we were featured on their main page, and we were in the top 10 of comedy podcasts for about 2 weeks. And it was weird, even on the main page of iTunes, in the What's Hot section, it was like, our podcast was right next to Oprah's podcast, and we were like, this is crazy. What the, you know, like, what is going on? You know, it's one of those things where you really aren't trying to do anything, and you're wondering, like, did someone, like, who is doing this? You know, like, who came in here and put our little logo here? This is weird. And of course, we didn't let it get to our, I mean, obviously it came and went, and after the feature, everything calmed down a little bit, but
okay.
We still get pretty decent downloads, but it's a blast. We get a lot of emails, and it's just a chance for me to run my mouth, which most people know I like to do a little too fucking much, so.
Yeah, but that's cool, and then, you know, I mean, will it, I'm hoping it'll get Casey some more music gigs and stuff, I don't know, you know?
Oh, yeah, it's definitely been, I mean, if anything, it's exposed her and her music to a pretty wide audience. I mean, you know, 2,000-3,000 people a week, that's
sure.
Great, you know?
That's awesome.
That's a lot of people to be able to come in and listen to her music. A lot of people anticipate when her record gets done and when she's done recording, and every now and then we throw on one of her songs at the end of a show just to get people excited, and you know, to me, that's the best stuff that could come out of it. If if a couple people who happen to like my art want to come over and listen to the podcast and they get hooked on Casey Music, then that's fantastic. And then, you know, a few people from around comics. And now we're starting to get people, just random people that didn't know who we are first. And that's the most exciting, you know, is when
sure.
you're like, wow, this person just stumbled upon us out of nowhere, you know?
No, definitely. And it really is more in independent musician terms. I mean, it's coming from radio. That's how I kind of equated it to my radio friends, because they're like, you know, how many people download? And I'm like, well, it's a few thousand. And I said, the great thing is, it's kind of like being a small artist that,
yeah.
you know, people slowly get aware of, and you go to your certain bars and people are downloading your stuff and they're aware of your work, and it's nice. So yeah, I mean, I'm glad it's happening for you guys. Because
yeah, well, I appreciate that.
Very cool.
Yeah, you know, it's definitely like, I mean, the internet's fucking crazy, right? I mean, the kind of things that are possible now. There was an article a while ago, like 1,000 true fans. Somebody, I think Wired magazine or somebody wrote.
Okay.
It was called 1,000 true fans, and it was kind of saying in today's world. With the internet, whether you're an artist, a musician, whatever, a writer, and as opposed to days gone by or whatever, of people having to go out and sell millions of records and sell millions of books or blah blah blah, you know, you no longer because the world has shrunk a little bit. It broke down the kind of the 1,000 true fans thing, which means if I can go out in the world and get 1,000 fans to like. Faithfully follow me, right? Or Casey, for example, with her music,
mm-hmm.
and they once a year put out an album or whatever, and these 1,000 people purchase that album, and then you do the concerts or whatever. You can make a pretty decent living,
yep.
off of just that. And that's the thing, like I believe these podcasts happen now. You know, we get on these podcasts, we get to have a great time. Not only do we get to have a great time, but we get to have a great time on our terms,
yep.
right? I mean, think about this. 10 years ago, 15 years ago, a lot of people probably had a lot of stuff to say. If they actually got the chance to say it, they still had to filter it through somebody else's rules and regulations. And so people still didn't get to really probably the chance to say what they wanted to say. Now you have anybody has a chance. You don't have to be super cool. You don't have to be, like, the most popular. Anybody gets to say anything they want. I think that's pretty cool. You know what I mean? Like,
I completely agree. Citizen media, man.
Yeah, and it definitely fits in, like you said, to that independent music thing. It makes you feel like, you know what? When I turn this microphone on, I get to bullshit a little bit. I get to laugh. I get to interact with some people. And then I post it online, and that's it. I achieved what I set out to achieve.
Exactly.
You know, where there's not... I mean, I do spend a great deal of my week doing work and interacting and with fans and thinking about the business and making some money and blah, blah, blah. With the podcast thing, it's nice to be able to say, hey, if money comes from this, great, whatever. You know what I mean? But first and foremost, I want to have some fun. I want people to have some fun with me. And Casey's the same way. If she gets to walk away with a few fans to listen to her music, that's great. But she also gets to have fun. And it really does turn into that kind of – that. And it goes back to that independent spirit of things.
Very cool. No, well deserved, man. I mean, I enjoy it, and I'm glad you guys found the outlet as well, and that's great, because you got something unique to offer to the podcast world, and I think you know, the people who are listening are finding it entertaining, and I'm glad that the audience is with you and continuing to follow you guys. That's awesome.
Yeah, well, thanks, brother.
Very cool, man. Well, what are we going to, convention-wise, where are we going to see you?
I think I'm actually going to go to New York.
Cool.
This year. I haven't been to that one yet. I've never actually been to New York.
No way.
So I think I'm gonna go to that one. I think I'm gonna go because I got an email from the convention saying I was going.
Oh, that's good.
I think one of my editors must have registered me or something, so
good.
I thought, oh yeah, I guess I'm going. So
that's excellent.
Man. I'm gonna go out and start to promote this a little bit. I've taken my hiatus from the conventions for the last year and a half or so, just to kind of try to focus on the writing and independent project stuff that I've been trying to get off the ground, but I've kind of missed it a little bit, so I'm going to go back a little bit. But I think that I'm going to go to New York and then maybe hit a few of the mid-level ones. You know, a little
okay.
bit of the Heroes Con. I always have fun at the Heroes Con, but I still want to take it a little easy. There's so many conventions now.
Sure,
it gets really hard to do them all. and they're just, it's hectic and too big, and I'm not no spring chicken anymore. And I got a puppy now, so.
Saint Bernard, man.
Child.
Not a puppy, Saint Bernard. I mean, those puppies start off like the size of a, you know, shepherd.
I know, she's 16 weeks old. We got her when she was 12 weeks, and she was 20 pounds. And she's 16 weeks now, and she's 40 pounds.
Nice.
So this month she's doubled in size.
Lovely.
Emma is her name. And she's pretty freaking awesome.
That's great, man. I love big dogs. That's fantastic.
Yeah, man. So she's pretty cool. She's got her bed in my studio. So in the mornings we go down for work, and I fire up the computer, and she takes her spot in her big bed and lazes around like St. Bernard's are supposed to. So it's nice. How about you, man? How's things been going with you?
Good. You know, it's
you're all up in the Kirkman Bendis battles, I hear, on your little on the word balloon.
Yeah,
taking
that was
part in the war.
I gave them the guns. I had no idea what I was doing. I'm sorry. I'm glad that blew over. Although, you know, I understood where both sides were coming from. And you know, it's funny, right. Claymore brought it up again just last week. We were talking, and you know, I it was an odd little thing, and I'm glad that it worked out for both of them, and I'm glad they had a nice panel at Baltimore to talk about it, and maybe it woke some people up. You know, I know you, as you said before, have had your own creator-owned thing that you've been working on, and you know, you felt the call from, you know, a really, you know, I know you've said this before, that like Mike Waringo, that, you know, kind of inspired you to kind of, you know, keep your stuff going and really, you know, get moving on it again. And I think that's great. And, you know, obviously Kirkman was inspired by, you know, his circumstances and stuff, and also by Mike as well. I know he was a friend of Mike's as well.
Yeah.
So no, I think it's great. I mean, you know, I'm happy that our, you know, you guys are thinking this way. I think the podcast does the same thing. I mean, it's, if you're not satisfied with what you're doing at your day job, and I put myself in that same position, this is why I do my podcast. So, I mean, that's the thing. You know, we're all trying to kind of do our thing and do it on our own terms. And I think that's
Man. I'm there with you. I was actually a little surprised at how much of an uproar the whole thing got, because it just all kind of seemed like, of course, right?
Well, that's the thing.
It's kind of like a cool pep talk, and it seemed to ruffle feathers for a little longer than it might have should have, but it seemed, I think, just like anything, man, anything that's going to inspire people to go out and do whatever. I mean, whether it inspires somebody to stay longer at their at the corporate job, more power to them. If it encourages people to go out and build their own castle, fantastic, whatever. I think it's all good. You know?
Well, and again, I think the changes in the business right now, we were talking about before we started to record, you know, the magazine, I think, is starting to reach a boiling point at $3.99, and the economy isn't going to help.
Right.
You know, I know Marvel itself is moving more towards more digital initiatives. I was going to ask you, with your writing, have you been approached to write anything that would go straight to digital rather than, you know, show up as a floppy?
I haven't, but I tell you what, John, I'm not fucking kidding. I'm going to get off this phone and email about it.
There you go.
Because I didn't even think of that. I mean, like I said, honestly, since I've started working on Oz, my head has been really in a hole. Not because I've been so busy, because I've really, for the first time in a really, really long time, been lost in the world. But and I knew that the digital thing was going on. But I'm gonna put out that call. That's a really good idea, because I'm definitely for any means of getting stories out there. I mean, in any form. I don't care if it's prose, novels, whatever. You know, like, fiction is, for me, fiction's fiction. I want it out there, man. If it's on the internet, great. If it's in giant hardcovers, fantastic. If it's in whatever, you know.
Well, I think we just need a cheaper Kindle. You know, the Kindle is still too expensive right now, I think. Do you have a Kindle? Did you buy one yet?
No, but I've wanted to so bad. I've wanted a Kindle so bad, man, to think, like, that you could sit there with that, that you could sit there and not have to, you know, at nighttime. Nighttime's when I do all my reading.
Sure.
And the thought of being able to sit there without having to, you know, some books are fucking heavy.
I just bought one, that Noel Sickles, Scorchy Smith that IDW released. I don't know if you know about that.
Yeah.
Noel Sickles was this, like, 30s illustrator and was a contemporary of Milton Caniff's, Carrie and the Pirates and all that. And he it has his early strip work and then a lot of his illustrative stuff after he got out of the comic strip biz. and stuff he did for all the different magazines. And it's an awesome book, but no kidding, it is like 25 pounds.
Yeah, man. Dude, I got the Absolute Watchman. How the fuck am I supposed to read that brick while I'm in bed?
No kidding. Or God forbid, on the bathroom, like in the bathroom or something.
Yeah, it's like I gotta like build some kind of scaffolding system.
I'm with you.
Over my bed to be able to read that fucking thing.
Well, and so, as you move as well. I mean, how many boxes are of books?
Casey was so mad at me because we just moved a week ago.
Okay.
And, the couches are less heavy.
I'm with you.
Than my books in my studio. My studio is a terrible thing to move. But, man, yeah, I wanted the Kindle. It's still a little heavily priced, but, man, every time I look at it, I'm like, the amount of space that thing could save.
Oh, I know. Oh. I'm with you. No, I know. I can really free up my apartment if I stopped having to move my books and if everything was on, you know, a nice little ThinkPad or something like that. It'd be nice.
You know, I wish to me, that's a lot more convenient than a laptop. I mean, I'll still carry a laptop where it, you know. But I don't want to have to actually pull out my laptop full on to read something.
Oh, definitely. You know? No.
If I could keep that little type book size thing, that's the way to go, man. I really dig that. I definitely still, I mean, the high price point, I mean, I probably get my ass kicked for talking like this, but it is becoming a higher price point for the single issues. I mean, I've definitely started to go trade route for myself.
Yes.
Part of that's not necessarily all the price. It's a lot more of just my preference on how stories are delivered to me.
Mm-hmm.
I like to be able to sit down and feel that when I read this story, I'm going to get it all. You know, I'm going to get it from front to back and really walk away with a tale at the end of it. You know,
sure.
And I feel that I've enjoyed. I do the same with television, though. I don't watch any television on TV. I only watch it on DVD. So most people spend about 6 months watching a season of television. I spend about 3 days. So.
I'll be curious to hear what you think of Smallville when it finally comes out this current season that is playing out on TV.
Is it better, or how is it?
It is better. It is better. I think it's better. I mean, I'm watching it.
I think that it could only get better.
No, I agree. Yeah, seven
was rough and tumble there for a minute, man.
Seven was a rough season. Six was good, but seven was a rough season. I agree with you.
Yeah, it was struggling a bit. I've actually taken a pretty big hiatus on it for right now. But yeah, I don't know, man. I make it to comic book shops less frequently than I used to. But again, I'm getting older as well, so I don't see myself as the main the barometer for it either. You know,
I hear you.
But I also, I mean, I spend a lot more of my time ordering things online, so it's much easier for me to order a nice collected edition when it comes out. You know,
did you get any? Have you gotten any of these software applications for the iPhone that are comic readers?
I haven't yet.
Okay.
I haven't done that only because I like art too much to boil it down to that size.
Right, and I think that's right now that's the barrier, I think, right now.
Yeah, that's too small for me. I don't get to – I can't appreciate the art like I do when it's book size.
Sure.
But I love these hardcover collections, man. Like, it's exposing me to stuff that I missed that was kind of, you know, American Flag. They just put that into a hardcover.
I bought that. Very good.
Howard Chaykin, so I just got that in the mail a couple days ago.
Classic.
Which is something I missed when it was around for the first time, whether it was, you know, I was probably just a little too young to be aware of it. And had they not collected that into a big book, I might have never went and found all the single issues, you know?
Sure.
So for me, it's something I think that it's a chance to give books a longer shelf life.
Sure.
Which keeps stories around. I mean, it gives us in comics a chance to have a little bit more classic tales that sometimes I think stories that come and go monthly we miss out on sometimes. You know, they have a little bit of longer reprint life. They can be around and more people can see them over time.
No, I agree, and I think unfortunately, as quickly as some things are turned around and put into collections, not every story in the contemporary, you know, the things that are released right now and everything. Not every story is worthy of a collection.
You're damn right.
So, you know, yeah. You know, so
no, it is, yeah, it's a double-edged sword, right? I mean, it's like, yeah, some, there's a lot of comic books out there, obviously. There's a lot of comic books out there. So, yeah, there is a quick turnaround on the trade. There's probably a lot of, but that's every market. That's
absolutely. Every product.
That's every form of entertainment. Yep. I mean, there's way too many CDs that come out that probably shouldn't come out, or you know, digital files. There's way too many novels that come out that probably shouldn't come out. I mean, that's just that we're going to be wading through that shit till the end of time. So.
No, you're right. Yeah, 90% crap and 10% good. No, I agree
with
that.
Yeah, but yeah, for me, I give a lot. I tell you what, I give a lot more books a try now that they're collected.
Sure.
Books that I used to probably pass on when it was in single issues, because maybe the art wasn't my cup of tea or something like that. Now that it's collected, I find myself going, you know what? It's a lower price tag. The story's all here in one. I'll go ahead and try it. You know, and I've been pleasantly surprised and really found some books that I've enjoyed that way.
I know you're a Lock and Key fan. Give me some other newer titles that.
I think Lock and Key is really freaking good, man.
That's like, cool.
I was floored at how much that I like that. I actually started rereading Why the Last Man because they started to put that in hardcover.
That's cool.
Big volume. So I think like the first two or three trades now is in one big hardcover,
mm-hmm.
Which that story is really good.
Oh, yeah.
I'm a late comer to this, but when Stuart Immonen got put on Ultimate Spider-Man.
It really is good, yeah. Yeah.
Dude, Stuart Immonen is so awesome.
I soon to be immortalized in an issue of Ultimate Spider-Man.
That's awesome. Can I tell you?
Yeah, well, unfortunately, he captures me quite well.
No.
Sadly. But
Stuart is... if I don't stop talking about Stuart Immonen at some point, people are really going to think I'm some kind of stalker, because I just can't say enough good things about that guy's art, man. But, I mean, most of the books that I'm going to say aren't going to be things that are new. It's going to be books people are thinking, well, of course. But, like, Next Wave, the two volumes of Next Wave.
Oh, yeah.
Those being out and collected in hardcover, you know, I bought those. Just awesome.
You bet.
Know? Just so good. Then, I mean, one book that I probably passed on a long time ago because they're all traded up were the Preacher books. I mean, while I thought was, you know, the ending didn't really do much a lot for me, but it was a book that, of course, was a classic to everybody.
Absolutely.
But I had missed out on it when I was young. Probably I just didn't have the money to buy that many books, but I like that. I like this, that I get to go back and re-experience stuff that, you know, people tell me I probably should have been experiencing or that I missed out on, just like novels, you know.
Certainly.
A book, well, you know, I mentioned I Am Legend earlier. There's a book that's been around since the 50s, and you know, it took me until a couple of years ago to read it. And man, thank God that book's still around in print because it's amazing. You know?
Matheson really is one of those great writers that if you aren't aware of his novels and also his television work or his film work, it's easy to, like, forget about him when you mention Bradbury and Ellison and all those great sci-fi writers of that time and everything. And it's like, yeah, but Matheson is right there with some really, really amazing stories.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's just, right now, it's just like, it's really just a chance with these collective editions for me just to really test things out. And Lock and Key was one of the most recent ones that I picked up and was really excited by. Oh, Umbrella Academy.
Absolutely.
That was awesome.
Very cool.
I thought Umbrella Academy was I will be completely honest and say that I'm probably not alone in thinking that when I first heard about it, just thought, whatever, right?
Like, sure, here's another rock guy trying to do a comic book, yeah.
Exactly. I mean, you just go, motherfucker. You know what I mean? Like, seriously? You're just like, God damn it. And I would, to be fair, it's not like I knew, I don't know their music that well, but yeah, you just get that stigma, and we've seen it before, people crossing over and doing stuff, so you just go, really? Okay, whatever. And then the artwork's really cool, and I was like, you know, and then it comes out in trades, so I'm like, what do I got to lose? Get it? best book I've read in probably this year.
Like, that's cool.
I just, what a fun book, man. Like, it, to me, it captured, like, everything that a comic can be. You know, like, a little bit of the dramatic, a lot of the quirky, crazy,
yep,
strangeness, and a lot of, here it is just because, you know, like,
well,
there's no deep meaning. There's no, like, it's just fun-ass book.
And it's just nice that a fan, you know, like him can, you know, not only make good music, but also, you know, really came to the... You know, it's not easy. I mean, and I have never done it, but I know from talking to you guys, it's not easy writing and drawing comic books. And I think great that, you know, this guy in his first attempt did a great book. I think that's awesome.
Yeah, no, man. I applaud him from top to bottom, man. And hope that I know that the first issue of that just came out, and of the second arc of that,
mm-hmm,
the new storyline, and I look forward to when that's collected. I hope they collect it quicker than they did the last one. I want them to have the turnaround time that everybody else has, so I can get it that much quicker. I'm excited now that there seems to be more of original graphic novel line coming. You know,
yes,
what I mean?
I
know they have the crime books over at DC coming, and you know, you're just starting to see that a little bit more from each company. Each company's starting to dip their toe in that water, and I'm really excited for that day. Me personally, with the project that I'm working on, my creator-owned project is that it's more of a graphic novel. It won't be it won't be chopped up into issues. I'm very anxious to see what not just on a business standpoint or from a fan standpoint, but I'm very interested in to see what the writers and the artists and just the creators in general will be able to accomplish with that kind of freedom, without clandestine page counts, without the almighty 22 page
yes
jail sentence. You know what I mean? Like,
no, I agree.
Which sometimes, I mean, I've learned on a shorter note on some of these short stories that I've been writing, you know, the 8 pages, the 14 pages that I've been writing, I'm thinking, Jesus Christ, man, like, how do you tell? Like, it's really weird having like a bookend page count like that. People who have asked me what's the biggest challenge in writing, it's that I've stumbled upon, is like, how do you put an idea in when you're already telling me where it has to end, you know?
Yeah, fitting it into a box.
Yeah, if anything, it's helped me appreciate what writers do a lot more, doing it myself now and understanding what kind of crazy labyrinth style puzzle you got to put together.
Sure.
To make it all work out, and it shows you how easy it is to lose, you know, drop the ball too, you know, where you're just like, shit, man, how do I keep this on track and keep it interesting and also stop it and start it every 22 pages. So, from a creative standpoint, I'm dying to see what some of these great writers and artists in our industry can accomplish when somebody says, just write your story, you know?
Yeah, unfettered, as long as it, you know, take as long as it needs to take or whatever.
Yeah, it's, now, you know, we're probably going to, I mean, just like anything, we'll probably wade through some shit, but, well, I think we're going to get some real gems out of it to see what, when the shackles come off, what happens, you know?
Well, I remember 25 years ago when the direct market was really exploding, and that's when we got the real burst of original graphic novels. And as you say, yeah, there were things like, I know the Marvel example that everyone always likes to bring up is Super Boxers. Was like, well, yeah, was that necessary? Was that really the, you know? I think that's,
right.
You know, that's when I think they started looking at, and, well, are these things cost effective? But again, I think the sophistication in art and writing, there have always been great books throughout each era,
yeah,
but now there seem to be a lot more, and there are a lot more voices, and they're getting
right
their chance in the market more than maybe they did 25 years ago, certainly even longer than that.
Right, and well, there it is, right? For the people who say the boxer thing, was that necessary? For me, I say yes, it is, because nobody can predict what people are going to like.
Sure.
So you put it all out there, right? You just, like, you throw things out there against the wall. Like, I think part of the problem is like, in all forms of entertainment and media, we've all got into this insane focus kind of groups mentality that we all think that we can predict what works. And so what we end up with is a little bit too much of the middle of the road instead of, I mean, I'd rather have the two ends of the spectrum, the complete asinine, insane shit, and then the brilliant top of the world shit, you know
sure.
what I mean? Instead of like a whole like world of middle of the line where we've all tried to edit as we go, we all try to be safe, and we all try to predict what's going to be the perfect moneymaker, the perfect thing like that, where I think, you know, you just kind of let a bunch of people go and start throwing balls around, and somebody's going to catch something, you know?
Absolutely, man.
I think we're at a good time. I mean, you know, you got a lot of people talking about, oh, the industry's shit, and it's broken, and it's dying, and yada yada. I don't necessarily know if it's dying as much as it's just changing, you know?
I agree.
It's evolving. What, you know, I think maybe people's hopes and dreams, maybe people who had hopes and dreams for it going one way, those hopes and dreams may die a little bit, but I think if they're open to change and checking out what maybe some of the younger generations are into and the way that stuff's going, it's going to be an interesting time, you know?
No, I agree. I'm glad I got a front seat to watch it all happen and talk about it a little bit each week on the podcast, man. So
yeah, man, it's going to be fun.
Well, again, good luck with the wonderful Wizard of Oz, which comes out next week. Eric Schanauer writing, Scotty Young drawing.
Yeah.
And look forward to the subsequent 7 issues. And also with you know, your creator-owned thing when you're able to announce it and get that thing rolling and everything else, man. And, of course...
Yeah, man. Hopefully you'll let me come back on and then pimp,
of course.
Pimp my project when I get it all wrapped up. I'm finally, for the first time, you know, I've said since the beginning, like, until it's actually done, I'm not even promoting anything. Like, I feel like there's been too many of us to get bit in the ass over the years of, like, getting stuff out in the open way too early. So it's when it's all done, I'm gonna come ringing your doorbell again.
Gladly, man. No, thanks for coming on. Now it's I'm sorry that it's taken this long for us to do a proper word balloon other than our little con hits.
Well,
so
you know what? But here's the thing, right? You and I we've had hundreds of discussions now, weekend after weekend after weekend. So it feels like you and I have done 150 word balloons. You know?
Absolutely.
We've done word balloons within word balloons.
That's true. It's just nobody else was listening. This time they
can
hear
Yeah, nobody them. Got to hear us, thank God, on some of those conversations.
Well, I'll see you in New York.
All right, brother. Well, I'll talk to you soon.
That's Scotty Young. Issue 2 of The Wonderful Wizard of Oz should be hitting the stand sometime this month. Be on the lookout for it and grab issue 1. Also, be on the lookout for that eventual collective trade. By all means, enjoy The Devil and Me, Scotty's podcast with Casey McCauley. Make sure you check it out. It's right there on iTunes, available to you, and all the various podcatching sites. So thanks for listening to Word Balloon. This is John Suntress reminding you that you can find us, of course, at Newsarama.com, at WordBalloon.com, where, of course, there's a full archive of many of our shows going back to 2005. We have our MySpace page, MySpace.com/WordBalloon. You can follow me on Twitter. John Word Balloon is my handle there. Any questions or comments on the show, there's a forum that's available at wordballoon.com, hosted by jinxworld.com. And, of course, you can always reach me by email, john@wordballoon.com. So that's it. Thanks for listening. Until next time, Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions. Copyright 2009.